Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, episode 18. I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and I'm joined once again by Abner Lee, and this time he's in San Francisco, right?
Yes, I'm in San Francisco covering Google Cloud Next 2018, their cloud-focused developer conference for the week, and there's been a ton of news from it.
Yeah, and news is kind of, I guess, you know, hit or miss in terms of things that might be interesting to consumers. A lot of the stuff is kind of on the technical or enterprise side of things. A lot of our listeners probably would not be all that interested in those things. But what of those things did you find most interesting, Abner?
So G Suite, that's where most of our audience is interested in, Gmail, Google Drive. So on the first day of the keynote, so Google Docs is adding this thing called grammar suggestions, which uses machine learning to suggest grammar suggestions as you write. And it's, according to the team, it's more advanced. It's a more advanced capability than anybody's actually doing, like compared to Office, and it's going to get better over time since it's an advanced machine learning model. I guess one of the more minor things is Smart Reply and Hangouts Chat, which is again the enterprise chatting equivalent. It's Google is full steam ahead on that, it seems, from all the announcements. Google Voice for G Suite, again, it's another enterprise thing that they're doing. From what it appears, it might be a separate app that's like moving away from the current consumer version. So there might be two split versions of that moving forward. I'm not sure. The enterprise version at least adopts this like Hangouts dialer icon, this green tint that matches Hangouts Meet and Hangouts Chat. So we don't know about that. So that's like the G Suite enterprise stuff. But moving on to a more design thing, we got two good looks at upcoming material themes for Android. So with Google Drive, Google Drive announced that it's working towards this priority view, which is basically uses machine learning to suggest files, a feed of files. So right now there's something, this quick access, which is this carousel at the top of Drive that suggests like things that were recently edited, that were recently commented on. But Google is trying to make that the primary view for Google Drive moving forward. But the thing to balance that is something called workspaces that allows users to pin files they frequently use. And again, there's some machine learning where Google suggests workspaces that it should create and files that should be in those workspaces. So if you have a meeting every week and you need these documents for that meeting, that workspace will be moved to the front. Or if you currently have a project that you constantly go back to, those workspaces are there.
So it's basically creating like a suggested section of like, this is the things we think that you have been working on lately, and basically, you know, putting them at the forefront so that you can easily jump into them. Is that the gist basically?
Yep. And it's the feed. It's another feed. Like this is, in terms of ranking, this could be the first page of Google Drive going forward. Instead of your list of files and that quick access up top, this priority view is the number one thing that opens when you open Drive. And as like another hint that this could be, like this is the new way going forward, we saw a glimpse of the mobile app of the Drive for Android that adopts Material Team. It's a stark white background. There's a search bar up top, which is so there's still a navigation drawer, it moves to a bottom bar, which is in line with many of Google's apps and other Android apps. That's a notable thing going forward, like a first peek of like
with this, something that might be coming. with this material stuff, and I guess this isn't just visual design. This is also like new features that may or may not have come, even if they didn't do the visual design. Did you at the event, did you get like the feeling that this is something that's going to be coming to the enterprise side of G Suite first, or is it? Did it seem like it's going to be everyone?
I got the idea that it was enterprise first because apparently, in one of the sessions, Google discussed that this was a thing they were working for 2 years. I'm not sure how long was all that was dedicated to this priority suggested view because they were working on quick access, but I think they emphasized that they were working really hard on these machine learning models to get this right. And they were talking to customers in the field, seeing how it could be improved, testing the models. So I definitely think it could first come to enterprise because it integrates with Google Calendar and Gmail to get signals of, so if you share a Drive file in an email thread, and that's an active email thread, Google Drive will surface that file in a suggested feed. So yeah, but I think it could, at the end of the day, come to consumer Gmail.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things on this slide says, it seems like all of these things are kind of enterprise focused. Like it says, in regards to the priority page for suggested files on mobile, it says it surfaces the most important files and relevant content for each worker. To help them stay informed, and then it has stay informed in bold. So is this like, I guess maybe part of the feed is like helping people see what other people have been collaborating on recently that maybe they're a part of that they maybe need to jump in and contribute to? Is that kind of
definitely
in the context of a personal drive that might not really apply as much because I feel like a lot of us use Drive for, you know, storing and managing our personal files, which, you know, a feed would not be as relevant for that because we're not usually collaborating with other people as much as you would in a workplace. So that definitely makes sense that a lot of this stuff might come to enterprise first, especially since, you know, they're showing it off kind of under the radar exclusively at Google Cloud Next. And they're not, I mean, from a PR standpoint, they're not announcing these features for users or for end users. So, I feel like a lot of the pieces just suggest that this is going to be enterprise first. We also saw Gmail for Android's material theme, right?
Yes, that was when they announced it at the Gmail session, they were more explicit about this, that they talked about this as a complement to the web revamp that they did earlier. So this is, compared to what we were just discussing with Drive, I think this is a much more focused towards everybody. So again, we see this search bar at the top of the app. There's still a navigation drawer. And at the right, which is a new motif for these Drive G Suite apps, is your avatar, is your profile icon, which I think might be a new element, but I'm not sure. You might have seen it in the material theme concepts. But anyways, there is no bottom bar or a new fab bottom app bar. It's the same location, which I was talking with the PM about. And it seems to be that seems to be like a more the decision they're going with. So it's a new style fab with the colorful icons and white background. But the main feed is it shows your attachments, so like Drive attachments, files, images, that kind of stuff. And the Gmail for Android is adding the density options we see on desktop. So you can presumably hide those quick attachments and make it as the interface as dense. And I think some people will like that a lot.
Oh yeah, definitely. People who hate the new Reddit are going to love that. Interestingly, I just wanted to mention we were at I/O. We got to sit at a roundtable with the material team talking about material theme redesign, and one of the things they showed was what they called a quote exploration of what mobile Gmail would look like with the material theme. And that one did show like a bottom app bar with like the hamburger menu on like the bottom left and a search icon. And then like one of those new centered fabs with like the colorful plus icon. And notably this one that they showed on the slide is a lot more, I would say, conservative in terms of changes. It just whiteifies things basically. It doesn't have a bottom app bar. For better or worse, and it seems like Google decided not to embrace this colorful plus icon because, well, I mean, I don't know, it's kind of a mixed bag because we've seen, I think in Drive, we see the colorful plus on the new icon on the web, so it's like a hit or miss thing with this colorful thing. I don't think it's colorful.
It might be the image, but I think it is colorful.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, it's again like in dark rooms, me taking pictures.
But
I'm pretty sure it is a colorful icon, and that consistency is going to make its way. In comparison to the web update, at this session, we were told that it is a smaller update, it's not as major. But as a, like a disclaimer, it's a directional. The update they shared is directional, which basically means that this is what they're moving towards, and it might the final design might change before it rolls out to all users. But the vibe I got from talking with the Gmail team afterwards was that this is a smaller update, that it's not going to be change too many things about the Gmail for Android experience. But also, I think it's important to keep in mind that given the labels and the folders in Gmail, that having quick access to that navigation drawer and scrolling quickly to access all those things is important. And I don't think a bottom app bar is necessarily best suited for that decision.
Yeah, so... one of the more, I guess, interesting things out of Cloud Next, moving past material design, was Google announced some new hardware. The Google Titan security key, which it looks a lot like some pre-existing hardware on the market. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe the company is called Phytion. I know I'm butchering the name. But anyways, this company, like on their page, they clearly say that if you order in bulk, you can customize the color, you can add an engraving on the back. So it's Google releasing hardware. It might be a bit disingenuous for this first generation. But
this is definitely not made by Google material, I guess.
This is the Google Pixel, if we're looking at the Pixel 1, if we're looking historically. But the thing they did do is add custom firmware. So two-factor authentication, or as Google calls it, two-step verification, is a security method. After you enter your account credentials and password, you need to have this key physically attached to your laptop and press a physical button. That begins a handshake process with the server to make sure that it is you. The idea is to deny man-in-the-middle attacks that try to steal the key, the contents of the key, the handshake from the key, as it talks to Google servers. So that's the general high idea between two-step verification.
Yeah, I mean, two-step verification is, you know, a lot of people are probably already familiar with it. I guess the primary method of two-step verification right now doesn't involve external hardware. It's just an app on your phone. Google's had its own authorizer, or what's it called? Google Authenticator, right. Google Authenticator has been out for a while. Authy is another competitor. I mean, that's the one that I use primarily. And I guess the key, you know, it's more secure in a lot of ways. I guess the main way I've seen people try to attack, I guess, like two-factor authentication is they'll call like a cell provider and try to port a phone number, and then that gives them access to two-factor for, you know, for various websites. Like Twitter, I think, still does phone-based two-factor. I know Uber does. So if you find the right, you know, vulnerability, and you find, you know, someone who has, I hate to be publicizing this method of cracking into someone's account, but, you know, you can pretty easily, unless you call your phone provider and you, you know, you protect, your number from being ported, it's pretty easy to break through that way. And I guess, you know, that's just one of the many imperfections with phone-based or phone number-based, two-factor. And this kind of hardware is you know, much more secure. And we Google bragged about that, right? At the event, saying that 80,000 engineers are using it, and no one's been
successfully phished. Right. And they also shared that all G Suite organizations that have rolled out security keys have not been phished, which is really quite an impressive fact if you think about it. 4 million G Suite customers. I'm not sure the percentage of those that have enabled security keys, but this is a good step for security.
Yeah, for sure. And you've used it a little bit yourself?
Yes. They gave some security keys out. The version they gave out is it's in the shape of a key. It has a USB-A port, which is unfortunate for this MacBook I'm using. So I've had to use the Pixel adapter, the USB-A to USB-C adapter that comes with the Pixel. And it's a ridiculously looking solution. Yeah. But it has NFC. So with phones, you can just tap to the back.
And so that the key has NFC, or is that the other one? So there's two, right? There's one that's Bluetooth, and there's one that's a physical USB. Yeah. And so the USB one has NFC as well, or is it the Bluetooth one that has it? Okay, gotcha.
The USB version also has NFC, and that the other one is shaped like a fob. It has Bluetooth and NFC, but there is also a USB-C port at the end. So if you bring a cable, like which is like such a clunky solution, you could connect it to a computer in theory.
Right. So have you tried out the Bluetooth one? I mean, you can use the Bluetooth one with your phone, right?
Yeah, which is, I think it's more ideal than NFC because I personally don't have NFC connected on. Yeah. Android Beam, remember that? It's still a thing. The wildest thing about using Android is sometimes, like, in our line of work, multiple phones, we accidentally push our phones back together and, like, it begins the Android Beam. And it's like this crazy, vaguely skeuomorphic thing where the screen contracts and it swooshes. It's crazy. I recommend everybody try that.
It's good for stealing APKs from phones at press events.
I have no idea what you're talking about. We've never done that before. Never, ever.
No, especially not. Yeah.
Yeah. Stop incriminating ourselves. Hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically, if one were to try to steal APKs from phones, unreleased APKs.
Mm. So yeah, I had used the security key, and the thing I got out of it was, like, the major thing they're doing is putting it on the Google Store, which is consumer facing in a way. It's making security consumer facing in a way that I think is very important, because it's on the Google Store. I can just imagine them, like, these keys at like $20, $10, maybe 20 for the moment. Imagine if every order of a Pixel book, of a Pixel phone, they throw in a key and encourage you to, like, you should set this up. It's makes for better security. Like, these, like, possible brand integrations are so important, and they're doing this for security, which is, like, a really good thing. So I think they're making, like, a statement by putting this on the Google Store.
Yeah, I mean, Google's been pushing two-factor, and obviously Google pushes security in a lot of ways. Another thing that happened this week was Chrome 68 rolled out. just as a sidebar here, Chrome 68 rolled out, which now labels all HTTP sites as not secure, which is a first for any web browser, I'm pretty sure. I think Google's on the forefront of that. It's going to happen. Yeah. You know, Firefox and Safari are probably next in line, but that happened. So yeah, Google's definitely a leader in advancing security standards. Two factors not an exception, and putting on the Google Store is definitely telling consumers like, hey, this might be a good idea for some people.
Yeah,
or for all people.
I remember like last month there was a thing about a Morgan Stanley analyst said Google should give everybody a Home Mini. Honestly, if you have a Google account, Google should give you a security key. Like, yeah, I think that's a good proposition.
Yeah, it would probably save Google some headaches from people's accounts who get, you know, attacked. So
that's awesome.
I'm not sure if the financial bottom line would even out there, giving billions of people a little piece of plastic might not be cheap.
Yeah, that's true. This is just us spitballing.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing that happened this week, surprisingly, Android P DP5 rolled out. Well, I guess a week early. You can't really say a week early when Google doesn't publicly say when these things exactly. I mean, we do get a timeline, but we don't get exactly when these things are rolling out. But Android P DP5 rolled out this week, beta 4, which is sidebar. That's just a terrible way to go about naming these releases, Google, because it's very confusing whenever we're trying to communicate to our readers which release this is, and some people are confused between beta 4 and DP5 and then the same thing. Maybe in the future Google will align those numbers or you know, name them in a different way, or just make it all one release. I don't know.
Some work to the Google.
So the release, long story short, it doesn't have that much of substance to note. It's basically Google saying this is, you know, it's the last release before final. So it's, you know, they're giving developers the opportunity to do one final test before Android P goes public. We are hoping for maybe some changes with Gesture Nav to continue ironing that out. But nothing at all. So functionally, it's identical. We did have a couple things. Maybe you can talk about that. A couple things in our everything new in Android P developer preview 5 post, which had everything being two things.
Yes, two things. They changed it. They changed the auto rotate icon, both in the quick settings and on the nav bar to this. It's honestly a rectangular retweet button from Twitter, which is funny. It's honestly funny. It used to be a circle in the nav bar, and it was more of a rounded thing in quick settings. So it's minor. I think,
it really does look like a retweet button, and it's very, I like the old one better. So if you could just revert that change, that'd be good.
And there was one more change, which I'm honestly blacking out at this point because it was so insignificant. So I'm stalling as I open this document. It's loading. The assistant shortcut was removed from the search bar. The microphone icon was removed from the Pixel Launcher search bar throughout at the bottom of the home screen, as well as in the recents view. I honestly think this is I can go either way, because on the Pixel, there's so many ways. The tapping and holding on the home button on the Pixel devices, at least, is a fast experience. On other phones, I definitely could see them adding this button to make it way more apparent. But in terms of the Pixel, which is the only thing we have now, this change makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you got tap and hold on the home button, and you have squeeze.
Yep.
there's no real reason. I mean, I don't know. I guess this might be annoying to people who are used to, I mean, there's a factor of, I guess, muscle memory here where, you know, some people may just be used to always tapping that instead of holding the home button or squeezing.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the squeeze sticks around for Pixel 3 because I use it all the time and I think it's great. Surprisingly, that was one of those things that I was trash talking before the Pixel 2 was announced. I thought it was such a gimmick. But now it's like it's the primary way. I've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's the primary way I access Assistant now. I didn't even notice. I honestly didn't even notice that they removed the microphone button because I never use it. And maybe Google has data showing that only a certain percentage of people actually use that button and just, you know, realized it was, you know, not worth keeping around. Other than that, I don't know about you, but I feel like DP5 is like noticeably faster. I don't know. It seems like
I haven't really. I could see that though.
It seems like a lot of the multitasking stuff and a lot of the gesture nav is a little bit smoother. I mean,
yeah,
still here and there, there's like some jank, but like I think generally it's like it's better. It's practically impossible to quantify, but I think it's better. I think it's faster. And, you know, I'm happy with that. I still haven't gotten used to the fact that I don't know. The way that the notification shade is designed still catches me off guard sometimes.
Really?
Do you still have problems with swiping away notifications? Like,
Yes.
It's like I don't understand this. Like I don't. It feels that it's been that way since. Like I don't think I had that problem with N, but I think with O that started happening for me. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly. Okay,
the problem is they added these quick actions, like how this gest you can this gestures like if you to snooze. To snooze right. Notifications like that thing
right.
that you need to have like you need it to be a little bit sticky, and right. I think that's where the problem originates.
Gotcha. That might make a lot of sense. That's kind of like the same. It's kind of a similar problem to the problem I was mentioning with the home button of it not being as responsive because it's waiting to see. It's waiting to see if you're going to swipe up, and so it doesn't react immediately, and so maybe. Yeah, maybe those other actions are making it so that that swipe gesture is not registering every time. And if that's the case, I'm down with just getting rid of them because, like, it frustrates the crap out of me whenever I'm just trying to, you know, just, like, quickly, like, swipe away my notifications.
I'm not very honest here. I never snooze notifications. Never, ever.
Yeah, neither do I. It's an all or nothing thing. I leave them there or I get rid of them.
Yeah, so maybe it's different for the average user, but I don't think that by that much. That it's removing it wouldn't the digital well-being features would still be there.
Yeah,
and they could have a reason to remove snoozing.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is what Android P is going to look like, when it starts rolling out. To the Pixel 2 devices next month, August. If we're going by history, the Pixel 3 would be October. So that should have like 9.1 or something, or a special version of 9.0, another build of 9.0 specific to the Pixel 3 devices with new features for that year.
Wellness.
Digital wellness, yes. If we're going
Although by it's possible, yeah, I would guess that it's going to be Pixel 3. I don't think that they're going to suddenly pop it into the final release. Make no sense. No one.
Yeah, I doubt that. Yeah. But by 9.1, presumably, we should put all the devices should see digital well-being rolled out.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for that because I mean it's unfortunate.
I'm afraid.
You're afraid of it?
The stats are going to be pretty for any of us here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's part of the job. I mean, I've been using the iOS 12 beta on my iPhone, so the numbers aren't that accurate because I, you know, I don't solely use an iPhone. So honestly, I'm not that bothered by the numbers, but it's because my iPhone is not my primary phone, or it's not the only phone I use. So it's only representing like, it's only representing like a quarter or maybe half of the time that I spend in, on screens. I guess the other thing that I think about with digital wellness is that, it's kind of a proprietary thing. It's kind of like a walled off, you know, kind of data set. So it's like, who uses only Google devices? Like, say we have wellness in the future on Pixel books and Pixel phones and et cetera, et cetera. You know, you kind of have to stay in your ecosystem to really get usable data, you know, because Apple's system is going to be completely different. And if you want to have the comprehensive look, I guess device to device, you could get a decent look. Like if I use an iPhone and a Chrome OS tablet, you know, in the future, you know, we may have digital wellness features on both of those. And, you know, I may be able to get decent data on each individually. But if I'm wanting to look at a bigger picture of like how my, you know, usage looks on Apple, I have to have, you know, their digital wellness on Mac OS, and I have to use iOS, and it kind of gives me a better comprehensive look. And so I'm like kind of I mean, there's no way around that. Obviously this was going to happen. I mean, I'm wearing AirPods. Mm-hmm. They primarily work with iPhones. You're wearing, you know, Pixel Buds. So, you know, we already live the walled off ecosystem life. You know, we don't, there's no mm-hmm. such thing as open standards anymore.
Standards, they could be Apple and Google and a lot of other tech companies, like web-based tech companies. I think they could come together and set out a metric, with these white papers on what they define like a minute of usage as being, or an interaction accounts towards. They could be something like that one day, but I think it's a bit early at this stage, which is like everybody's just trying to get this out the door.
Yeah, it's a long shot.
Consumer interest in features like this.
Yeah, I'd say it's a long shot. But what I'd like to see happen is Google do what it's done with everything else. You know, like Google has Chrome app on the iPhone. Obviously, they can't build in wellness features to the OS because they don't have that access. Mm-hmm. But on something like
app by app basis.
On the Mac, they could, yeah, they could do it on app by app basis, so they can keep YouTube. Track of all.
YouTube, you know, is an example of this.
Exactly, perfect. Like YouTube on iOS, it could easily track my usage in that, and it could apply the same kind of rules. If I want to set a rule for only watching an hour's worth a day, it could count my iOS usage because Google has access to that. Another aspect too is they could release a third-party macOS app, because macOS is a little bit more open than. It's a lot of bit more open than iOS is. So they could, you know, they could do a third party wellness app on the Mac, and that'd be great. You know, I mean, that's my primary setup. That's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about like, I've got a Pixel 2 XL and I've got a MacBook, and I want to use the same wellness data on both devices. And at the moment, that's not possible. So that's just something that's been stewing in my brain about these wellness features. And I just wanted to get that out. It's a thought, frustration, or I guess, I don't know, just a feature request. next up, we had Galaxy Note 9. So this is not my typical beat. The Galaxy Note 9 is set to be announced early next month at Samsung's event in New York. And it's pretty much been leaked in its entirety at this point. People who are following us or any of the countless Android blogs are probably well aware that it looks a lot like the Note 8. There's no notch, which is interesting in itself, I think, because Samsung is like one of the only holdouts left in that
good
category.
For Samsung.
Yeah, good for Samsung. At the same time, I bet the S10 is gonna change that. But So anyways, my story was that the Note 9 is launching next month, and apparently, according to a source familiar with the plan, one of our sources, Samsung is planning to launch Fortnite. So Fortnite for Android, you know, I'm not really a big Fortnite player. I've played a few times, and I know you said you don't really like it, but apparently Fortnite is going to be a Galaxy Note 9 exclusive for 30 days because of a deal that Epic Games worked out with Samsung. So yeah, I mean, I guess the real story here is not, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of aspects. One of them is like the Note 9 is traditionally, or the Note line in general has traditionally been kind of aimed at professionals, yes, you know,
exactly.
Like, and so it's weird to see,
like, the crossover is very weird. Yeah.
Right. It's like
very weird.
Their main promotion is going to be a game that's primarily played by, you know, teenagers. So
I don't know. Battle in the boardrooms, battle in the mobile apps. I don't know. It could be a stress relief thing that market that none of us are aware of.
Yeah, I know that plenty of older people play it. I'm just saying, primarily Fortnite seems aimed at the younger side of things, and so it seems like maybe Samsung's had a little bit of a change of heart in terms of what it wants its target market to be with the Note line. I mean, and on top of that, so our source says that on top of the Note 9 getting Fortnite for 30 days, Samsung's also offering two options for pre-order bonuses. One of them being like $100 in V-Bucks credits, so in-game currency in Fortnite for unlocking like costumes and stuff, which is, it just sounds crazy to me that this is what like they chose. This is what they chose to be the incentive for buying a Note 9. Fortnite costumes. Yeah. That's basically what it boils down to. Is Fortnite in-game aesthetic options. And then if you're not, so like Fortnite for 30 days is going to apply to all Galaxy Note 9 owners. But if you're not interested in the V-Bucks, you can opt for a pair of headphones with the Note 9 pre-order. So I guess the bigger story here for people who aren't going to spend $1,000 to get a 30-day exclusive access to Fortnite on Android when it's already, as I may note, already available on pretty much every other platform. So there's no way that people buying a $1,000 phone don't already have access to Fortnite on some other platform.
Yeah.
Whether it be Switch or PC or Xbox or whatever. But apparently, I guess if you do the math, this 30-day exclusive would mean that Fortnite is publicly launching on Android in late September. So, yeah, Epic Games said, I think previously, that it was coming this summer or something, and so maybe it got delayed. Maybe it got delayed because they cut a deal with Samsung. So
yeah, which seems very likely.
Yeah. So neither of us are real big Fortnite players, but that's your exclusive alphabet scoop for the week. Other notable stories we had this week was Oh yeah, that's right. Smart displays. That's a big deal. We've only got 15 minutes left and we need to talk about smart displays. So
yes,
smart displays were announced back at CES and now they're out, right?
Yeah. The Lenovo smart display, which is honestly the nicest model, comes in 8 and 10 inches. There's a nice wood backing on one of them. It's Google's answer to the Echo Show, which we first heard about at the end of 2017, was it? Amidst all the YouTube, Amazon drama. It's here. Oh, yeah. It's good. Our review loved it as a kitchen device.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where Google's pushing it. I think that's the ideal. I saw another headline. I think it was Techno Buffalo. They said that, you know, no offense, Techno Buffalo, but I didn't get it. They said everyone needs one of these in their living room, which I was like of all the rooms, like I think the living room is like the least likely, because it's like, are you gonna? I mean, duo calls. Let's use that as an example. Are you going to be sitting on the couch halfway across the room and have a duo call on an 8-inch screen? That makes no sense. And then I guess like a lot of these little interactions, you know, it's like we already have
interaction.
We have displays in our living rooms already, you know? So it's like, you know, you can Chromecast YouTube and, you know, Spotify or whatever, but, you know, having a smart display in your living room doesn't really bring much benefit. But like you mentioned, the kitchen, I think, is like the ideal use case, because most people don't have a screen in their kitchen yet. So we all have screens in every room in our life, and we have a screen in our pocket that we carry with us 24/7. And a lot of us have screens in our cars, like CarPlay or Android Auto or whatever. But a lot of us don't have screens in our kitchen. And I guess people who own an Echo Show are probably the exception to that rule. And I guess there have been, you know, I think there have been like tablet setups where people have owned like a tablet and made a setup for their kitchen or whatever.
Oh, definitely. Old Nexus 7s.
That's been going on for a long time. Yeah, Nexus 7. I think I remember seeing some hacks of people setting those up in their kitchen or attached to their fridge or whatever. But yeah, so I think Google's really pushing this thing for the kitchen. I think that makes the most sense. And I guess evidence of that is they're pushing recipes as one of those big features. And it makes a lot of sense. Honestly, that's like the most, that's the thing I'm most excited for to use this. Currently, I have my home Max in my kitchen and I'm ready to move that to the living room and put a smart display in the kitchen and, you know, just say hot word, give me a recipe for paleo, gluten-free, vegan chocolate chip cookies or whatever. And
I would love some cookies right now, actually.
And, you know, be able to, you know, I think the recipes make no sense on a speaker because it's like they try to read it.
Which they tried. They tried.
It's still a thing to do.
No, it's not.
I've never used it that way. And it's, I think that's a really interesting point because I've long said that even with their fallbacks, I think smart speakers, their best home in general, like Google Home, I've long said for a few years now that the kitchen makes the most sense, you know, for setting timers whenever your hands are sticky when you're cooking or, you know, listening to music and jamming out while you're baking or making lunch or whatever, you know, like that just makes sense to me because, you know, a kitchen is typically, you know, a place where we don't have access to those things. And so I guess the smart speaker takes the really, I think it boils down to is the smart speaker or the smart display, I should say, is taking a device that already I think is very well fit for the kitchen and making it even more kitchen friendly. Mm-hmm. I guess with the exception of now we're gonna have sticky fingers on screens, which we don't really need. But
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts
On that sticky fingers note, what was that? The DARPA thing at Google, the phone, the blocks phone.
Oh, Project Aura.
Remember Project Soli, the thing where
Soli. Gotcha.
Yeah, navigate.
Yeah, Soli was like a radar. It was a mini radar that was built into, or they tried building it into a Wear OS or Android Wear at the time watch. This was announced back in 2015, pretty sure, Google I/O 2015. It was announced alongside Project Vault and Project Jacquard. Obviously, Jacquard has become a consumer product. It's available in a Levi's jacket, which I've worn. Speaking of Jacquard, where is Jacquard? It's been a while, so and we need an update on that. But Soli, as you're saying, is a little mini radar that they, in 2016, I believe, a year later, they demoed an Android Wear smartwatch with Soli built in that you could control, you know, you could basically use your finger movements to control Wear or Android Wear. So how does that connect to sticky fingers?
So you can just like hover over.
Oh, right.
Having
Project Soli on a smart display would make a lot of sense. And why haven't they done that? There's got to be some functional or practical reason because in watches, the challenge was they had to make the watch like way bigger to cram the hardware in there.
And to battery, this is what
smart display shouldn't have those limitations. I would guess is that the tech just isn't there in terms of like accuracy. And I guess another thing might be intuitiveness of controlling it. Like people, it may not be obvious, like, yeah, you need to do this little gesture if you want to scroll and you need to do this gesture if you want to select or whatever, you know, like that probably does not come that quickly to people. And I bet even if they did put Soli in a smart display, you know, people would probably just use the screen. Until we find some, I mean, the way a lot of these kinds of things work is a sidebar. This is a super sidebar, but I was reading this week a story about how Microsoft, when they first launched Windows, they included Solitaire and Minesweeper as a way to train you to use your mouse. So it was basically like the games the games were included. Like you didn't know this, but like they were training people to use mouses for the first time. And so, you know, like that's one example of like, you know, Soli needs that, you know, like they need something that will, they need a tech, a device or something that will help treat, teach them, you know, a new way of interacting with devices. And I guess I would guess that Soli just doesn't have that yet. And maybe smart.
Oh, that not that right. makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so smart displays. I still don't know what to, if I were to get one, I still don't know where I would put it. I think I would put on my desk as like a quick music access kind of thing, like dedicated music player with pretty good speakers. I'm not sure where I would, beyond that, I guess I would put it in like a main hallway kind of thing with a table. But for me at least, I'm excited. Honestly, I really like this Lenovo hardware, how it can tilt horizontal and vertical. I think that the wood veneer, the shape of it looks really modern and nice. So as an object, I really like it. And I think like this is on the level of like Google's design, if they were to come up with a smart display, but Lenovo did it. So props to them on that. But yeah, I don't really quite see the kitchen use case for me personally. But I think when Google advertises this, the scent at in the kitchen, it's going to be a major, major thing.
Yeah. I think one thing that this thing could benefit from is a battery. So we've actually heard that Google, we've mentioned this on Alphabet Scoop. So here's another little mini scoop for you. We've heard from one of our tipsters that Google's working on, I mean, we've heard for a long time from other sources that Google's working on its own first party smart display. But specifically, we heard from one of our sources that has a battery. And I think that's one thing that these could really benefit from. One, it's kind of ugly to have wires laying around your kitchen counter. I mean, that's one thing. Two is I feel like these kind of displays would be really nice to like move around the house depending on where you need it. So like yes, have it in the kitchen for a week at a time, move it into the living room for whatever, you know, there's various like use cases. Like you could have a party or whatever in your living room and you could have friends over and it might make sense to move it in there for the party or whatever. So like, that's one thing that I think, you know, might be a big win for, or might make this product make more sense for more use cases.
Honestly, like a wireless charging base that you can like buy extra of and you just like plop it on into like these use cases around the house. But I agree that the better idea is a built-in battery.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be, I mean, at least with, we've seen the JBL one and the Lenovo one, they're both kind of bulky enough that you could probably fit a pretty big battery in there, you know, like, Some of these Bluetooth speakers that some of these companies are making last days because, you know, they're bulky devices and you can fit a huge lithium ion battery in there. And so, you know, it's obviously going to be way better than a tablet. A tablet would probably, you know, I don't know, it should be. I mean, our tipster said something like 6 hours, which is not as much as it really should be if you think about it, unless Google's is like super like sexy and like slimline. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But at least with this Lenovo one, they could fit a huge battery in that back like stand.
Absolutely.
So what else do we have this week before we close out the show? Are you wearing your smart ring right now?
No, I'm not. So this company called Motive made a smart ring, which is a all day fitness tracker, just a fitness tracker. It has a very, in this casing that is thinner than a nickel, they've managed to fit a heart rate sensor, which is, again, this technology is, to me, is an impressive package. It's the quality-wise, it's as good as a Fitbit, and it costs $200. So I think if they got it down to like $100 price point, or at least $150, it'll be more attractive to people, but props on the technology. Also, the Android app needs a lot of work. This was an iOS-first product, and the Android app feels like a direct iOS port. So that's
that's a bummer. So wasn't good enough for you to wear it all week at Cloud Next.
No, and battery days too, battery life is 3 days. So
yikes. Yeah, I was thinking about it. So like, it makes sense for me because I wear a wedding band. So, you know, functionally, yeah, it might make sense to just replace my wedding band if it lasted like 30 days. Like if I could get that tiny tech like to last like a month, then I would charge it once a month or even 7 days. If I could get a week out of it and just charge it every Sunday night or something like that, maybe that would make sense for me because I wear a ring anyway. But 3 days is... that's just like right there at the borderline of like that requires too much maintenance. And it's not really about, you know, like I say this with smartwatches too. It's not about how long it takes to charge. I mean, you can charge an Android Wear watch or an Apple Watch in a few hours, you know, and it'll be good for a day at least. But you know, it's the habit of it, I guess. It's the,
yeah,
you know,
3 days is a odd time frame.
Yeah. It's hard to get into a habit of charging your ring every 3 days. Like that's, I don't know. It's like, you know, you charge it Sunday and like, oh crap, I got to remember to charge it Wednesday. And then it's like, oh, now you charge it Friday and now Monday. And you know, like that's, you can't just, there's no, I feel like the daily charge, it's like daily charge is like, that makes sense. That's what we do with phones, right? Like we're in the habit, we plug at night, you know, we plug at night, wake up in the morning, you're done. That's what we do with phones. That's what we do with like a lot of devices. Once you get past that, you have to get to a certain longer term battery life before it's actually more convenient. Is 3 days actually more convenient than 1 day? I don't really think so. Is 7 days or 21 days or a month better than 1 day? I think yes. So yeah, I think that's the main thing holding back. You know, right now it's a technical limitation of lithium ion, I think. And so it's like... Every day we see a new report in the news about some new, you know, battery technology, whether it be graphene or whatever. But, you know, hopefully in the next couple of years or next few years, we'll see something emerge.
Yeah, that is
practically
when batteries get longer, that is the next shift in this industry of what longer running batteries will power. So that's an exciting thing to look forward to.
Sure.
I wonder if Google has any battery research going on.
Yeah, I don't know. That's your job. You can figure that out. I officially assign you the job of figuring out if Google has an internal battery project.
Engineers. Yes. Awesome.
Other stories this week. Let's see.
Kind of a last week thing.
Yeah. So like there were a few things. There was the Fuchsia story from last week. So we've got Fuchsia Friday going up in probably an hour or two. Our Kyle Bradshaw, the report from Bloomberg from our old pal Mark Gurman and the other Mark at Bloomberg, Mark Bergen. They basically put a timeline on Fuchsia for the first time, which Google immediately denied in, you know, on the record statement. So, you know, who knows what? I mean, obviously, PR has no real incentive to tell the truth. It's PR's job to, you know, protect the company image at all costs. But so this report said that Fuchsia could replace Android in 5 years. And within a few years, Google wants to put Fuchsia on smart speakers, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think the report really had that many new details. They did. It mentioned some like internal politics things about like some conflicts that happened between the ads team and the Fuchsia team and, you know, what direction they want to take Fuchsia, if they want to have more privacy or less privacy than Android, or if they want to embrace, you know, traditional Google ideology or lock things down more. But other than that, I feel like Kyle really knocked it out of the park over the last couple months, digging up most of the very basic details. Even, I mean, Bloomberg gave us a backlink on YouTube, Google working on the YouTube app for Fuchsia. So if you want to read more about Fuchsia, I would recommend Kyle's work in Fuchsia Friday. Just go over to 95 Google and search that. But I think that pretty much wraps up the show. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we?
No, that's it for the week.
Okay, great. Well, we'll see everyone next week. And until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop every week here on YouTube. We record this podcast every Friday. And publish every Saturday morning on your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music. And you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me. And we'll see you again next week.
Bye.